You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we're also heard on the World Wide Web.
Yes, on 1510 WWBC. You can log in and get all of our shows on demand. You can listen live. And also we share all of it on our Facebook page as well as SitaMediaInc.com. And fantastic run of shows. And as we close another year, it's hard to believe we're going to be saying 12 years next few months.
Yeah, when we started the show, I was in my 40s.
I was in my 40s.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we sit here in the studio every Monday. Ellen, myself, and Samantha comes in as well. And we talk about kitchen table topics, things that are going on around the nation, things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida, and we try to be the change we wish to see, right?
That's right, yeah.
And so I have to tell our listeners that we've been on air almost 11 years, mm-hmm. right? And I would like to take this discussion into my home sometimes, right?
Right.
But of course, no.
Yeah.
In that big old house, we don't have room for a place to sit down and chat. So it's kind of like the money that we pay for our airtime here on WWBC, this studio has become part of my life, part of what I do as a human being on this earthly journey called life. This 1 hour every Monday is very important, not just to me, but for people who are like-minded that enjoy listening to
and
us.
Think of all the
sharing.
Friends and all the different perspectives and opinions and love that we've shared along the way. I mean, it's been, you figure, two guests a week times 52 weeks
times
11 years. That's
right.
A lot of people that we've gotten a chance to meet.
So our lineup this morning, Ellen was listening to someone last week, and she met Jen Lee, who she has these podcasts, and it's called I Need Blue Podcasts. So she'll be on the second part of the show. And the first part of the show, my friend Anna Ishkamani is calling in, and Anna is a state rep for District 47 in Orlando. She's been on the show multiple times. It's very easy to plan for a guest like Anna Ishkamani because we are like-minded. And we think alike. And I think most of the times, if you come across someone in your life that cares about the same things you care about, you could have a conversation on air with no prepping, which is really good, right?
Yeah.
And so Anna is on the phone, and we're going to have her say hello to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Hi, Anna.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for taking time from your busy life in Tallahassee, Florida, to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we know that we're living in an environment where everything is changing, not just for women and children, but it's changing. The environment is changing. The way people think is sharing. It's changing. We're seeing so much division and hate and racism at times and bigotry, people spreading fear and conspiracy theories and things like that in our world. And I'm glad that you're here to kind of straighten that out this morning.
Happy to be here and do what I can to help. I mean, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, the political rhetoric has been fueled in a lot of sensational directions. There's just so much disinformation as well. And, you know, the sad part is that there's a lot of politicians who benefit from that polarization, that divide. So they're motivated, to pit us against one another versus actually solve problems and bring us together.
Well, Anna, I truly, truly love the human being that God has made you and put you on this planet because you inspire and motivate so many of us. You know, this morning I was talking to my sister and I said, today is the fifth year of my mother's death anniversary. And my mother was the original advocate in that My mom, even though they had 18 children and they didn't have bread on the table most of the time, she would try to feed the homeless. She would try to give women a place in her home if they needed a place to sleep. She would try to get together with the villagers and share whatever crops they had so that we had food. And I think some of my caring spirit goes back to the time where we are the environment in which we're raised in. And I see that in you. So tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you got involved in politics.
Well, that is definitely very relatable for sure. And I think that compassion is one that so many of us can connect to, especially as Americans and as Floridians. But my origin story actually began as a daughter of immigrants. And so, as you know, Sita, both of my parents came from different parts of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They met each other in Orlando, working at the same donut shop. And so they made Central Florida their home. I have a big brother, Aria, and a twin sister, Ida. And we didn't have a lot of resources growing up, but we definitely had a whole lot of love. And we worked hard. You know, I never saw my parents take a break. They were always working. My dad worked multiple jobs to make ends meet, went to UCF while raising three kids. And then my mom had a degree from Iran she could not use. She worked at fast food restaurants, then Kmart was her last job before she passed away to cancer when I was 13 years old in 2004. So I have lived life longer without a mom than with a mom, but her spirit is always with me. And, you know, this notion of like giving all that expectation and living with gratitude and also having grit at the same time is something that I get from my mom. And so I try to give back to this community, because when my mom passed away, I was very blessed to be at a public school that just wrapped its arms around me. And, you know, kept me secure. You know, I got really involved in high school theater, not as on stage, but backstage. I was a techie for 3 years, and that really was my safe space. Like, all through high school, I never got in trouble or ended up in the wrong crowd because I had this space to call home that allowed me to express myself and build leadership skills that eventually would prepare me as I went to UCF myself.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like you found your tribe, right? And I think
For you
and I, you know, everyone who knows us, we're fiscally responsible and socially liberal in most things. And I see a lot of my friends are like that. And that's why I say, well, with the Democratic Party, it's like a big tent. At the Leadership Blue last week, when I looked around at the sea of faces, I saw Hispanics, I saw African Americans, I saw Iranians, I saw Indians, I saw Caucasians, I saw gay people, straight people. I mean, I mm-hmm. saw everyone, and I felt as if I belong. So,
right.
I mean, so, you know, it's that sense of belonging that we all seek as we grow older and bolder and wiser, right? So tell us a little bit about this big tent that we have and how people who are looking for somewhere to belong. Talk a little bit about our party and that message that we want to get out, that you can belong to with us and share the same ideas and maybe want to do the same thing for humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's what attracted me to the Democratic Party. I mean, I actually was first registered, no party affiliation. My parents were both Democrats, but when it was time for me to get registered, I instinctively remember wanting to decide on my own. And so I checked off that NPA box, and it wasn't until 2010 that I was a student at UCF, and I was getting really involved in different issue-based advocacy, primarily around like international human rights, and then I also was really engaged in environmental conservation efforts. And I remember the only two groups tabling in the summer of 2010 was the organization I was working with, the Iranian Student Organization, and we were collecting human rights petitions alongside the College Democrats at UCF. And so I got to know these young people as my peers and got really involved in women's issues, advocating for women's health care and domestic violence prevention and so forth. And that was my entryway, you know, into the Democratic Party. I registered Democrat that summer. I got really involved with the Women's Caucus and started championing advocacy that impacts women and girls. And I do think the Democratic Party, you know, is a space that has every type of cultural identity and class experience and perspective. And it's really important as leaders that we meet folks belly to belly and to find the consensus, you know, among a diverse group of people. We're definitely, you know, not a party that pushes people out. Like, we really want to hear every perspective, even if it challenges what we know as as our own reality. Like, we take off those blinders and we try to look at the bigger picture. And so that's always been a Democratic Party that I've tried to model. And I really, do be as intentional as possible in making sure that no one feels left behind or left out.
Right. And I like that you advocate for policy in Tallahassee, not just benefits Democrats,
right. But
benefits all Americans. Because, I was talking to somebody about President Biden and the Build Back Better plan. And I said, well, look it, we're not going to be around to see the new bridges that are coming, to see the upgrade in the airports, to see what happens when a mom can take a child to a daycare and be comfortable to go back to work and know that child is being taken care of by a worker who's getting paid adequately. We're not going to be in all the households when an elderly is taken care of, because what do we worry about as moms, our children and our parents? And the person said, well, I don't know, I don't have any small children, and I'm not too concerned about the elderly. And I'm like, why? I'm sure you have an aunt on Medicaid in a nursing home. And he said, yeah. Well, do you love your aunt? Well, we're not that close, the person said. I'm like, but you don't understand. When we fight for policies, it's not just for people who are registered as a Democrat. It's for all Americans to enjoy their earthly existence on this planet. So take it from there. I mean, what do you say to someone that says, well, it's I don't have children in public schools, so I shouldn't care. I don't have people in a nursing home, so I shouldn't care. I don't worry about the environment because I just wake up and I live. I mean, what do you say to people like that?
Well, first of all, if we don't invest in prevention, you're going to pay for something down the road. It's going to be much more expensive. So even from like a perspective of fiscal conservatism, let's just say that you're not driven by the collective good, but you are thoughtful to reduction of crime. You're persuaded around reducing healthcare costs or reducing institutionalization with institutionalizing will cost money, right? And so really, really encouraging folks to invest proactively to better everyone's life, because again, when you invest in good public schools, when you invest in transit and good public transportation, that will reduce the traffic you go through every morning. So I think it's really important for folks to realize that though you might not see the direct connection in said policy or program, you do benefit indirectly. When we invest in public education and job development, then you're helping to reduce folks who turn to crime to survive, which makes your neighborhoods a lot safer. Talking about drug addiction, right? So many folks are, fall into addiction due to their own mental health illnesses, due to trauma that they grew up with or experienced, or of course, again, that intersection with criminology. And it's like, we could prevent that from happening if we invest in mental health resources. You might not think you need to access mental health resources, but your life will be better if we make those investments. And so I think it's helping folks understand, A, there's a cost savings here, but B, when we are intentional in investing in prevention, we save costs for everyone.
Yeah, so we just want to tell our listeners, we're speaking with Anna Ishkomani. She is a Democrat, and she is the state representative for District 47 in Orlando, and she's also my friend. I really love you, Anna, and you're just great. But here's the thing. We know Auntie Maxine, right? Maxine Walters. And I say to people all the time, every family needs an Auntie Maxine. Like, there should be a head of your family that's modeled after Maxine that says, hey, are you registered to vote? Do you care about the environment? Do you care about how much money you make? Do you have an affordable home? Do you care about the environment? And it should be kitchen table topics at your own home every week or every month or maybe during a dinner party, because people, for some reason, they're expecting someone else to do the heavy lifting. Like, I would meet people and they'll say, why do you enjoy politics so much? I said, well, from the minute you wake up, from the womb to the tomb, it's politics. The clothes you wear, who's making it? Is it hardworking labor in Bangladesh at 2 cents an hour? I mean, are you in a public school where teachers are being paid well? Do you work in a nursing home like I do as a nurse and understand what Medicaid is all about? Do you have co-workers with small children have to call in sick because they don't have somewhere to put them? I mean, it affects all of us. Don't you agree?
Agree, 100%. Yeah, and I think that's the I mean, healthcare is such an important example. You know, if you want to save costs in the public sector in programs like Medicare and Medicaid, investing in prevention is key, because somebody's going to be able to live a healthier life without needing medical attention if they're able to access those preventative care services, whether it's an annual exam, whether it's cancer screenings, whether it's being able to access things like contraception or PrEP and PEP. These are all different types of resources that can help reduce costs down the road, right? And help folks be more in control of their lives. And so, yeah, you know, it's not as controversial as a lot of folks think. I mean, talk about child care expenses. You know, a lot of folks would, their major expense right now is child care, and it's hard for people to go back to work or work full time when they can't afford child care, because sometimes it's cheaper to be that provider versus go back to work. And that keeps especially a lot of women out of the workforce, which means that a woman's ability to be self-sustaining is limited because of these child care expenses. And then investing in child care also just can lead to better outcomes for that young person, because then they're going to be able to access early education. So all of it is tied together. And I think what's really funny about it is other countries have already mastered this. Like, it's so interesting to me how we have these hotly contested debates in the United States, because other countries are very similar to ours, have already accomplished a lot of these programs that we're talking about.
Well, because they're really pro-life. I mean, because they're really pro-life. Pro-life shouldn't only be a term that people use when someone is pregnant. Life is, people want a choice, you know, with having their families and how many they should have and birth control and all that. But if you really care about life, I think every young mother leaving the hospitals should have a checklist, and it should say, do you care about the environment? Check yes or no. Do you care about an education for your kid? Check yes or no. Do you have healthcare? Yes or no. I mean, and they have something like that. And then a lot of the physicians who are friends of mine would say, we worry about the children when they're born, because we know that those parents are going to go home and they don't have a clue how to take care of this child. But when you're pro-life, you should care about the environment. You should care about public education. You should care about transportation. You should care about how that child is going to live, with whom, where, and under what circumstances. And I find that is the hypocrisy sometimes that I see a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. You know, the pro-life is something that I think every person relates to, in the sense that we want to support prenatal and postnatal care services. We want to make sure there's access to child care. We want to make sure that someone can live a life, you know, free of crime. And yet, in this country, the term pro-life has very much just been centered on the abortion debate. But we really have a great disservice when it comes to meeting these standards of life, liberty, and freedom for all. Like, it's not guaranteed in this country, and that's what we're trying to improve. That's what we're trying to pursue every day. It's just, a lot of folks operate with their self-interest, which I understand. You know, you're thinking about, how am I going to pay my bills on time, put food on my table, take care of my kids? But again, it's this, how do we help folks understand that self-interest can also be tied to the collective good?
Right.
That we can meet your self-interest while also improving your neighborhood, improving your city, making sure that all boats rise at the same time.
Well, it's like I was saying to a friend of mine, you know, we have, you know, of course, Iranians and Indians, lots of doctors in the families everywhere. Engineers, doctors, lawyers, business owners, anything people want to do. And I know we have a lot of Iranian friends in Canada who are physicians, and they pay their taxes, 30-40%, but they also bring home 60% of what they make, and they're quite happy with it. And they're not complaining, because they'll say, Auntie Seats, we pay for education, we pay for healthcare, we pay for mass transit. We want people to wake up every day and enjoy their existence on this planet. Why should one person have food on the table, and right up on the next block, somebody is living in anxiety about worrying about the same children that everybody wanted them to have? Now their children are anxious as heck because they don't know where the next meal is coming from. So, sometimes I feel we lose the essence of why we're on this planet, and it is for the collective good. But let's shift away a little bit from that, and let's talk a little bit about the mask and COVID and all that. I understand people want a choice, and that's their right. But being a nurse, I tell you, the last 2 years, we have seen the conspiracy theories. We have seen the governor of the state of Florida. We've seen other people just carry on and it just spilled over onto the school boards. What can we do to bring our country together? This should not have been as political as it became.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I wish I had an easy answer. I mean, I think first of all, it's really important that we try our best to lead with empathy and not to perpetuate judge and shame. You know, I think unfortunately, this has become political and there's a great deal of disinformation, but people turn you off when you lead with judgment and shame. So I've always tried to lead with wonder in talking about the efficacy of vaccines, the efficacy of mitigation tools like masks and hand washing. Actually, I hosted a virtual event a few months ago with UCF's Vice President of Medical Affairs just to talk about vaccine hesitancy. And, you know, our conversation was, it wasn't partisan. It was fact-based. We addressed some of the disinformation about vaccines and create a safe space where folks can just have their questions be answered without it being caught up in the political noise machine. And so to create a lot of those spaces, you know, we also hosted a vaccine event early on when it first became available with different communities, with the Asian American community, with the African American community, and the Caribbean community, with our Latino community members. So we try really hard to also just, you know, address the vaccine hesitancy head on, work with the faith-based community to open up access to vaccines. And it's just really shameful that our elected officials, you know, went down this political agenda, because arguably it just makes it, you know, it feeds into someone like Governor DeSantis' political ambitions, because he's trying to contrast himself with President Biden. But at what cost? You know, you perpetuate all this disinformation. You don't correct vaccine myths, you know, in a live press conference, which is exactly what happened with our governor. And it does make the work of our medical professionals and scientists a lot harder. And also people die, you know, as a result, because they unfortunately fall for these political traps. And so I think it's important that we try to continuously provide information that is in
and accurate
languages.
Information too, you know, like
correct.
like you know, Dr. Fauci, people make fun of him, they say things about him, but the truth of the matter is, when I applied years ago to come to immigrate to the United States, you're talking, 38 years ago, you couldn't get into the United States without vaccinations.
Right.
No one could come to the U.S. and they tell you flat when you go for your visa, they need to see your vaccination card. Did I ask anybody what was in the DPT or whatever it was, and MMR? And no, I didn't, because that was the rule. You can't, and even up to today, you can't go to certain countries without having your shots. And so I always wondered why people now, they're saying, well, we have all this information, we could read about it. But look, I'm still alive. A lot of people who got those shots on their arms are still alive. And we did it for the common good. We did it because scientists believed that a world needed people to get vaccinated, you know. So I feel really bad, because I do understand both sides of the issue. And I just pray for our world. I don't know what else we can do, because in order to reset the economy, we got to get this pandemic under control right now, right?
Correct. Well, we are not out of the woods when it comes to this pandemic. And, you know, unfortunately, not only are we combating the actual variants and the virus itself, but we are combating disinformation, and we are combating political leaders who exploit and divide us versus actually solve these problems to keep us healthy and strong.
Right. So I have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you. So I was talking to someone in our party last week, and they were saying that that when I speak to you, to just mention what's going on with the registered Republicans, that they're now saying outnumbered registered Democrats. And is this true? Is this the first time in the state of Florida this has happened?
It's a little of a misled point, because
okay,
if you're just looking at active voters, then yes, there are more active registered Republicans right now than Democrats. But unfortunately, there's also tons of thousands of inactive Democratic voters that are about to be purged if they don't reactivate the voter registration. But obviously, this is very alarming. I mean, the fact that Democrats have really ceded ground due to the lack of investment in things like voter registration. You know, Governor DeSantis put $2 million into Republican Center Voter Reg. We have not seen that type of monetary investment from the Democratic side. I think what's most interesting about this trend is that we see more and more Floridians registering as no party affiliation. And so it tells me that folks are kind of disenchanted by the two-party system as a whole and really focused on values and issues over that party ID.
But how do we get those people to get off their couches and vote? Because they want childcare. They want a good teacher in their school. They want a clean environment. They want a good road to drive on. God knows they want to go to the post office and be safe. So what is happening to people that they've just become complacent? And when you say to them voting has consequences, it does. We see that with the judges. We see that everywhere. What is their issue? How can they not get involved and stay engaged year round? Where are we missing that message as Democrats to get those people off their couch?
Well, first of all, you have to prove to people that voting for Democrat is going to improve your life. And I don't think we're doing a good job of that. You know, I try really hard in my district to be a problem solver, to be a happy warrior, deliver results, you know, even in a state that can be challenging for Democrats to do that. But we have helped Floridians access their unemployment benefits, their rental assistance, solve their small business challenges, and really show up for folks in a meaningful way. That inspires people to come out and vote for you, no matter what your party idea is. And so I do think that's a part of the challenge is we have to prove folks that when you vote Democrat, your life will improve. Congress isn't doing that right now. Congress cannot really formulate a way to pass bills, and that's a whole conversation for a different time. But in addition to, proving your worth to be elected, you also have to, of course, connect with folks 24/7. So, I'm always knocking on doors. I'm always connecting with our community, but I don't see every elected official do that 24/7. A lot of folks just do that during campaign season. That's not really good enough.
Yeah, that's why we love you, because you are easily accessible. Anna Ishkamani, you are seen, sure. You are heard, you care about all Floridians, you care about the United States, and you are always out there, and your message is one of love and compassion and empathy. And you look, I don't know how you navigate all of these things, and you do it, but we have a few more minutes left, and you're up for re-election, correct?
I am. Yeah,
so give us your website so people can go check.
Yeah, and when
story.
Do we start calling you doctor?
Soon.
Yeah, I'm also getting my PhD right now at UCF. But if you want to learn more about the work that we do and get plugged in, you can visit AnnaForFlorida.com. I'll spell that with two N's, AnnaForFlorida.com, and definitely keep in touch.
And maybe you could tell the rest of the elected officials, share your secret with them, because I think it's terribly unfair for politicians on both sides of the aisle. This is not just Republicans and Democrats. It's both sides. That you should not only come and knock on doors when you want people to vote for you. You should not only talk to people when you want their money and their time and their effort. You should be doing that year round. And we can agree to disagree respectfully, but you don't see some of those people unless it's a photo op and they want to be seen like they're doing something when they're really not doing anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if I get my way, I think everybody gets a chance to rule the world one time. And I think that if I get my way, there'll be no signs.
If I get my way, it'll be Anna for governor.
You'd have to amen, sister.
But listen, Anna, I will try to bring you back on later on, because I do love what you do and what you say, and you do walk the walk and talk the talk. So thank you so much for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We love you, my dear friend.
We do love
you. Love y'all, too. Thanks so much for having me, and happy holidays to everyone.
I was just going to say, merry everything.
Yes.
So thank you all for tuning in to the first half here with Anna Ishkamani. We're going to be taking a quick break to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Jen Lee. I Need Blue.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9, mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we're also heard on the World Wide Web. Ellen, take it away. Where can our listeners find us?
1510wwbc.com is the spot where you can hit that button to do on demand, listen live, as well as get all of the podcasts and archives from all of our past shows. And also we share that on Facebook, and that kind of shares it to everything else. So again, 11 years on the air. Congratulations, Sita. It's unbelievable. Right along the way.
I'm telling you, it's a lot of work, but it's a work of love.
It is a work of
love. It's become quite an interesting challenge for me, and I enjoy it. So this morning I was listening to the news, and I do want to say my thoughts and prayers are going out to the people that died on that bus crash in Mexico on the border, as well as in Kentucky. I saw Governor Andy Beshear this morning almost in tears, all teared up, because there were children among the dead, 5 months old to 86 years old. And I just want to tell our listeners that we should not only come together in times of tragedy. We should be each other's brothers and sisters keeper year round.
That's right.
As long as we have health and strength and breath and a little change, we should be okay. Mm-hmm. But try to give back if you can.
Absolutely.
It's not a bad thing.
And it's not always about money. It's about your time and like some of the great things that Jen Lee is doing on her I Need Blue podcast.
Well, we have a lot of people we know for a fact do have time. Mm-hmm. But they give back zero, a big fat zero. But you met Jen Lee, and Jen has a podcast. It's called I Need Blue.
Yes.
And she's taking her experience from a very harrowing experience, I should say, and she's turned it into advocacy. She's doing something about the bad experience where a man stopped you, I suppose, and he was pointing a gun at you. Right, Jen? So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and gently, easy name. I shouldn't forget it. Tell us a little bit about the I Need Blue podcast that you host and share real stories with your listeners quite a lot.
Yes. Thank you for having me and welcoming me into your home, number one.
Yes.
Congratulations.
This is our home, this studio, Monday home.
Yes, I heard what you said in the beginning, so I figured that was perfect. So thank you for having me here. Yes, I am a survivor of a group armed robbery. It was about a decade ago. I was store manager of a clothing store. Went to work like I normally do, was helping the customers, and behind me, I hear, "Give me all your money." And I stopped because those were unusual questions to hear in the fitting room while you are helping ladies.
Yes.
So again, I hear, "Give me all your money." And I turn around and I have a man in a mask with a gun. A man in a mask with a gun pointing it at me, close enough that I could touch it. And I kind of stopped in disbelief at what I was seeing. And then he waved the gun for me to head towards the register. There was about 9 of us total in the store at that time.
Was that here in Melbourne?
Nope, this was in Virginia.
Wow.
It was a Saturday, about 7 p.m., so it's still light outside. Like, this robber was brazen. You know, light outside, it was in a strip center, so there were lots of people around, and there was 9 of us in the store, including children. So I go to the register, and he waved his gun for the other people to follow. I give him the money from the registers, and he asked for the money from the other shoppers, which they gave him. Then he started asking me if we had a safe, which we did not have a safe, and he asked me that twice. And after the second time,
and all this while pointing a gun at you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The gun was absolutely present. And by the second time that I told him, no, we don't have a safe, I could tell my answer was irritating him because I don't think he believed me, even though I knew I was telling the truth. I'm giving you like the expedited version.
Yeah.
Of the
I'm having chills just thinking about, you know, you and all those people in the store. But was it an AR or a small?
Just a handgun.
Okay.
Yep. And so then he asked, he saw a door to the back room and he asked me what that was. So I told him that goes to like my office and storage. And instinctually, I knew he was going to have us go back there. And sure enough, he ordered us to go back there. I had everybody go in front of me because in all honesty, at that point, he had all of our money and I really was not sure what his intention was after that. So I had them go in front of me. And he stopped me at the back door and asked what that was. And I told him, I said, well, it's the back door. It'll let you outside. However, it's probably locked and the alarm will go off. So he continued to usher us through, lined us up in front of my desk. I pulled the landline out of the wall and then he asked for our cell phones. So I stood there and watched the other shoppers give up their cell phone, which is very personal to us, yeah. Right? It's our diary. It's our contact.
It's our life.
Yes. I still had mine in my pocket. And he asked about one more room that was back there. And again, I was like, that's where we're going to end up. And I knew if I turned and that phone was in my pocket, he would see it. So I reluctantly gave up my phone. Mind you, at this point, I hear children crying. I hear praying. All of this is going on in my senses.
And no men were around to even try to take him down?
There was one.
Okay.
There was one. And so my senses were in complete overload with everything going on. All of a sudden, this responsibility of basically, I suppose you could say I had an out-of-body experience because at one point they were just my customers, right? Now all of a sudden I feel like I became their mom and I was ultra-protective of their care. He ushered us into the other room, and I remember we were all kind of lined up against the back wall, leaning on boxes of hangers. And he looked at us, and he said, "Don't say anything, and no one will get hurt." So we're all just kind of staring at him, you know? He asked me if the door shut, and honestly, I never had shut that door. So again, I gave him an unsatisfactory answer of, "I don't know if it does. Don't say anything and no one will get hurt." We heard it one more time. and then he slammed the door shut.
Oh.
Yes. And I have a lady who I really enjoyed helping on the sales floor. I knew she had had some tragedy before. I look over at her and I can hear her like starting to go into a panic attack. So I immediately go over to her. I pin her arms up against the wall and I was like, I need you to stay with me. I was like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I could slowly feel her body start to fall. So I had someone come over and help me so she wouldn't fall. And next thing I know, she's in a full-fledged seizure on the floor in this back room.
From the anxiety and everything else, yeah.
Yes. Fortunately, my sales associate actually had managed to keep her cell phone. I was so thankful for that. I had her call 911 and just let them know what was happening. She let them know, hung up. I have this lady on the floor. I know how to put on a Band-Aid. That's the extent of my medical knowledge. So
I'm glad she had that phone. He didn't frisk anybody then.
No.
Okay.
No. So I'm looking at this lady, and I've been asked, when did you panic? And that is the moment that I could feel panic start to take over, of like, oh my gosh, if this lady dies or something terrible like that, you know, it's on my watch. I swallowed it down. I was like, you got to keep it together, Jen. The lady was getting worse. I asked my sales associate, I was like, listen, I need your phone. I'm going to have to make this phone call. Keep in mind, I heard the doorbell go off twice. So the first time I was thinking it was just the robber leaving. But when I heard it again, I didn't know if he had come back and if he was going to push that door open. All this is going on in my mind, all of these things. So I get 911 on the phone, and I'm going to tell you, 911, the operators do not get the credit that they deserve. They were my first line of defense. They helped keep me calm and guide me through helping this lady, and I couldn't have done it without them, and I am so thankful. On the phone with them, and all of a sudden, the door pushes open. It was the police officers. And in that moment, I had a sense of relief because now this responsibility was taken off my shoulders.
But also, well, they were really to protect and serve. That's what you,
yes.
When you see a police, or then when I see a police officer, that's what I think. And in a case like that, it's not just protecting and serving, but they're your savior at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yep. And we did feel safe. We could kind of breathe. I had never experienced a moment like that in my life. But that is the moment in the experience where one day in March of this year, funny story, I go to pull open the refrigerator door and I stop, like something just slapped me in the face and was like, you have this story, Jen, and it's time you share it. It's time to help other survivors, but also reinforce the idea that our law enforcement is needed and they are here, like you just said, for the betterment of people.
Right.
It's
right.
Real life story. It is not political. It is not opinion. I did not want that. But it's real life stories.
Right. And so do you look for specific type of guest based on their trauma, or how do you find your guest?
Trauma comes in all forms and shapes. So there is not one particular type of guest that I look for. To give an example, obviously I have robbery, I have child abduction, domestic violence survivors, male and female. So I have all different types of episodes, but I also have law enforcement. I have a police officer. Our Sheriff Ivy here in Brevard County also has been
him.
A guest.
Yeah, he's our friend.
Yeah, he's been a guest as well. So I'm thankful for that. I'm on episode 16 today. We're just starting in March. That's really exciting. But trauma comes in all forms. And so.
But what is the common thread that you see in the trauma? Is it the lack of resources? Is it the foundation for these people was shaky? Was it that they had people in their lives who were not mentoring them? What is it? Because, like, oftentimes, you are the environment in which you're raised in, right?
Yes.
And I know that as a fact because of the domestic violence in our family that was swept under the rug. I know that for a fact because we had 18 siblings, children. My parents had 18 siblings, and it was not an easy life. How could you give advice to 18 people and take care of? We have no resources, nothing. So they did the best they could. So what is a common theme, the thread that you see that causes people to act this way?
So yeah, I think you actually kind of touched upon it. Is I think a lot of it stems from our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was trauma that was done to us, trauma that we witnessed, we kind of carry it with us through our life. Maybe it goes untreated. Maybe it becomes normal. When you grow up seeing, you know, your parents argue with each other, one hit the other, whatever the situation is, that kind of becomes the normal picture of a relationship for you. So the cycle continues. So you're right about that. But another thing that I think some trauma victims have in common is we know what it feels like to have our sense of safety shattered. That's an amazing feeling. It's in not amazing in a good way. It's drastic. Like for me, when I went surreal, that's a perfect word. You know, when I went to
You're shaken.
Yeah.
Shaken to the core of who you are.
Yes. But also I was in my store. That was my home. It's the same thing as someone coming in here and pointing a gun at you. This is your home. You feel safe here.
Yeah.
You come here all the time. You know what to expect. You have a routine. And to have someone come in and violate that, it's traumatic, and you don't forget.
Right. And so are your guests only local? And you said you tape at home? So it's lead us through, like, what happens when someone wants to call in? Where are you situated? Where are they? Do you have a board that somebody runs? How do you figure out who's coming on the show, and would their story be a good fit?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a great question. So being a podcast, and I do, I have a little area in my home, I can record nationwide. I use certain software, it's called Squadcast, similar to Zoom, but honestly much better because it allows me to record each individual on separate tracks. I do my own editing, so it makes editing easy for me. Guests, I really enjoy at this point reaching out to local organizations. Like, I've worked with the Women's Center of Brevard, Life Recaptured, and I'm getting ready to work with a couple other organizations. I really like giving back on a local level as well. But I also, like tomorrow, I'm doing a recording with Survivors of Blue Suicide. They're a national nonprofit. I found them just through Instagram.
Yeah.
So I do.
So you're kind of like us. You find a guest and then you reach out to them. So what is your end result? Do you hope to try to change our laws, or do you hope that somehow your podcast would influence maybe people to invest in mental health, invest in childcare? I mean, because all of us have an end result. Like, why are we doing this, right? Like, I do the show because I think I want to be part of the change I want to see. I just don't want to live my life being comfortable and being a mom and raising my kids. I want to give back. And when people say give back, they give back with time, energy, money, or effort. Or you try to influence someone. What is your end result?
Mm-hmm. Number one is awareness. It's about having the tough conversations about topics that people don't want to talk about. Especially childhood trauma. That is really hard for people to talk about. Kind of closing our eyes or saying, oh, that doesn't exist, does not help with the problem. So I think number one, having that awareness is the first priority. Number two, the real stories, being able to make the emotional connection with other people. I believe the emotional connection it's kind of the call to action.
Yes.
To get people to realize, oh, wait, you know, maybe this is going on in my school or at my neighbors or whatever. You kind of become aware of some of the things to look for.
Yeah.
Down the road, I do want to create a foundation and give back through my own organization. That's kind of in the thought process right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am always learning something new from my editing, my website, which is www.ineblue.net, constantly updating that with new content. All of the episodes can be found there as well. But also, like you and I were talking about before the show, I use Buzzsprout. So that puts all of my episodes on all of the podcast platforms. So like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, I Need Blue can be found on all of those as well. Try to make it easy for everyone to find the content. And diversity. I have particular stories right now, but I am always interested in other topics as well. So you can go to the website. Actually, there's a tab that says submit your story. Fill that out, easy peasy, send it to me, and then I will get in touch with you. Also on my website, ineedblue.net, there's a get help tab, and that is nationwide hotlines, resources, local,
national. And do you find that your guests are open to using the resources available? Do you have people that actually will go and speak? Because, you know, a lot of people, there's a stigma attached to mental health. We have a lot of bullying, not just from regular people, but we have politicians who post things on their Facebook bullying women right here in Brevard and elsewhere. How do you reach those people? Because it's not just about the bully, right? Sometimes a bully will bully a bully. But the victims, I mean, it's like a never-ending circle. Maybe the bully was bullied in his childhood. But people have this way of communicating that sometimes that's really weird. You can't bully other people if you're an elected official, for example. Or it's just like you say, parents, people in leadership roles. So do you find people use the resources that you give them?
So what's interesting is actually I found one of my stories. She is the one who told me the resource she used here in Brevard County.
Right.
So it was great to meet that person with the story and then be like, hey, you know, this is who I use to help me. I love that. I think that's great. Life Recaptured, it was the same thing. There was a story and they're like, listen, this is where I went and they helped me. So it's great when kind of like the information you all provide too. At times, the resources that we provide, yeah, people use them, but also, especially with survivors, they may not want others to know that they used it.
Right. And also, you know, it's all about all of us being one in one big family, right? When you survive something and you feel good that you survived that, you want to share that story because everybody opens a nonprofit. Who opens one? They say, well, I want to change the hearts and minds of people. And some people say, well, I want to change the hearts and minds and laws. You have a different perspective on why you're opening a nonprofit or why you have a radio show or why you write a book. You want to change the life of someone. So you feel like by doing the podcast, this is what you're doing. And I think you are, because people like to talk to someone. So you're kind of like a therapist.
It's got to be cathartic. Jen and I talked about that when I first met her, and I said it's got to be cathartic to be able to kind of put your story out there a little bit, knowing that, first of all, that it's going to help somebody hopefully come out of their shell and maybe not go into that deep depression or whatever the side effect is for not bringing
it. Yeah, maybe
it
they don't have a family or friend they can speak with.
Exactly.
So where
but
do
the
you
other,
see?
And the other big part of this, I don't want to interrupt, but the other big part of this is that prevention piece. Like Sheriff Ivy has always told us every time he's been on the show, when you see something, say something. Because your instincts, all of us, we have to be able to trust our instincts that when something doesn't smell right or something doesn't look right, there's something going on and we need to do something about it. And that's, you know, that's about as socialism as it should get, right? We hate using that word, but that's truly what I think about when I think about socialism, is that we take care of each other.
Right.
Is that we're social beings and we try and make sure that we're looking out for everybody.
So for our listeners, you're right. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Jen Lee. And Jen she's the host of a podcast called I Need Blue Podcast. She actually does it from her home right here in Melbourne. And she tries to help others with her story, where she was held at gunpoint in a store that she was a manager at, along with 11 other people, you said?
Nine
other people. So where do you envision your podcast going from here? You said you want to have, it's now an LLC. And I, you know, me and my big mouth, I had to ask Jen, well, do you get paid for this? I mean, is this how you make a living? And she said, no, she just does this because she wants to help people. But she gets her health insurance from her husband. Because you know me, my mind immediately goes to, do you have health insurance? Do you have an affordable home? Do you have somewhere to live? That's the home condition now. I'm glad you have health insurance. Mm-hmm. And talking about Sheriff Ivey and the law enforcement, you know, we've said on our show before that when we heard that word defund the police, we were so upset. Right. That word should never be used because the police, they're our friend. They're here. But some of them do need in service and some of them do need assistance in their daily job like everybody else. But I like what you said, because when the police showed up, you felt safe. You felt good. And isn't that wonderful that when everyone sees a police in uniform or law enforcement, that's how they should feel, right?
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And that's part of the premise behind Real Life Stories.
Right.
But imagine, you know, just after Jen's story and then listening to a few of the podcasts that she had, I can only imagine the human beings, the police officers that were showing up to those events and the trauma that they experienced too. And they experience it every day.
Right.
They
right.
watch it happen. They see it happen. So, you know, again, kudos and love goes out to all of those people that are our first responders, are all of our first responders.
Right.
And including the friends and family that come.
Well, it's difficult, you know? But you know, you are the environment in which you're raised, like we said before, even the police officers. Some people put on a uniform and a gun because it makes them feel like they have power. We just saw on the news where a police officer just beat up his wife because he got two girls pregnant at the same time. Doesn't mean because you put on the uniform and you wear a gun that you're great. They come with bias as well in their job. You know, they're humans, right? Yeah. So give us your website so where people could go on and find you and share their story with you. And yeah, I like the idea that you have law enforcement officers on there too, because they see a lot, they know a lot, and they can help us as well.
Absolutely. And I do want to say, and this is really important, especially with trauma survivors, it's just audio. There is no video. We can change your name. So if you have any apprehension about that, we're going to do everything we can to make sure you feel safe and comfortable. Website, www.ineblue.net. You'll find episodes. Submit your story. Come be part of the family.
What a great idea that you decided to take your tragedy and turn it into something positive. Because a lot of people would be so upset that they would have to seek, you know, help, counseling and stuff for the rest of, because I know once my sister was held at gunpoint and the robber said to my dad, give me the bread in your showcase, which we had some really nice Trinidad and Tobago hops bread, and he wanted the money in the register. And my sister just looked at him and she said, here's the bread, here's the money, now take your gun and scram. And my sister was only 13 years old. I'm like, how did you? She said, because, you know, we have faith. And she knew that nothing, but I was like, you weren't scared? And she's like, no. I just told him, here, you want anything else? Then my mother showed up and said, give him some of the cake, too. Because my mother decided maybe he was hungry. He was homeless. Something happened
Nani
to
Raj.
Him. Something happened that he's there begging with a gun, trying to, you know, hurt
Jen
somebody.
Lee, thanks for all of you. I Need Blue, great podcast. And to Anna Ishkamani, of course, our friend. Thank you so much, our representative here in District 47 in Orlando. Another great episode of Viewpoint with Sina and Friends. We'll see you next week.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.